Hi everybody, welcome back. Today we're going to talk about graphs and sorting. But before we dive in, are there any questions about homework 4? Yeah.
What is it?
It's due a week from Wednesday, so a week and a half-ish. A week and 2 days. Any other questions? That's a good question. All right. Probably more on a Wednesday. No? All right. So let's start with a few clicker questions. And the first ones are about growth. So here's our first question. So you imagine you're delivering packages to people in an N-story building. And so what you do is you have one package on the first floor, one package on the second floor, one package on the third floor, and so on. And so because you don't have a cart and you can only carry one package at a time, you take the first package, you go on the first story, you leave it there, or you deliver it there. You go back, you take the second package, you deliver it to the second story, and so on. So every time you take a package, you have to go back to the bottom, take the package, and go up the to the story where you've left. So the question is, you have N floors. How many stories do you need to walk in total? Is that A, big O of log N, B, big O of N, C, big O of N log N, D, big O of N squared, or E, big O of 2 to the N? Down is another story. So for delivering the second package, you have to go up 2 and down 2. So delivering the first package is going up 1 and down 1. Delivering the second package is going up 2 and down 2. Delivering the third package going up 3 and down 3.
And you're still adding the ones from before, right?
And you're adding all of them together. So the question is the total number of stories you need to walk. Yep.
Alright, so
I'm going to stop at 3. Unless people need more time. Two 2 times n, right? And so I factor out 2. That's 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus n. Does anybody remember the formula for 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus dot 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 plus n, or has it written somewhere?
Yeah, it's n squared plus n.
It's n times n plus 1 over 2. So that is n squared. So the 2 and the 2 cancel out, and then you have n squared plus n, and that's big O n squared. Or if you consider the first floor, you know, being the ground floor, and you don't have to go up anything, you know, for the first one, you have 2 times 0. Well, yeah. 2 times 1 to go to the second floor, 2 times 2 to go to the third floor, and this is n minus 1. And then you'll have n minus 1 times n over 2, which is also big O n squared. Any questions? Yeah?
Can you just explain what big O log n is?
Sure. Let's see. It would look like... You mean like a problem where that would be the case?
Yeah, it would be like choose an answer.
Yeah, so suppose that you have... you're looking for somebody in the phone book. And the way you look the person up is you open in the middle, and then if they're, you know, if the person in the middle, I don't know, if their name is before that, you're going to open in the middle of the first half. So each time you divide it in half, and you look only in half of the list.
Okay, then it would be n log of n.
N log of n. We'll actually have something later, this class. And then log in. Any other questions? Okay, we'll continue with the second. So this is the same kind of problem, but now I have a cart, and I can take all the packages with me. Okay, so I take all the packages, I load the cart, and I also deliver one package on the first floor, one package on the second floor, one package on the third floor, the same problem. How many stories do I have to walk this time? Is it the same options? A, big O of log n, B, big O of n, C, big O of n log n, D, big O of n squared, or E, big O of n, 2 to the n?
It includes like the last time when you go down all these stories, right?
It includes that. Stop at 1:30. Because all I have to do is load my cart and then just go up one story, deliver the first package, go up the second story, deliver a second package, go up the third story, deliver the third package, and so on. And then, so I have n stories to go up, and then I go down all those stories, so I walk 2 times n, which is big O of n. Okay, any questions? So last time we started talking about how Google finds stuff, and we said that we can see the internet or a piece of the internet as a graph. And a graph is just a fancy word to mean this kind of structure which has nodes and links between the nodes. And we said that the nodes are different web pages, and the links between the web pages will be the links in our graph. And so we said that if you have a link between one webpage, for example, our course webpage, and some other webpage, for example, the iClicker webpage, there will be an arrow saying that we can click from this page, we can click somewhere, and go to this page. And so we talked about graphs, and we talked about all kinds of notions in a graph. We talked about a source, which is a node with no incoming links. So there's just outgoing links from a source. A sink is a node that only has that has no outgoing links, so it has only incoming links. A path is a list of nodes so that each adjacent pair of nodes has a link between them. A cycle is a path where the start of the first and the last nodes are the same. A connected component is a set of nodes where I can go from each node to any other node in the component. And a tour is a cycle that includes all the nodes in the graph. And I'm going to show you what these mean, and then we're going to have a question about them. So this is our graph. What is a source or multiple sources in this graph? So a source, again, is a node that has no incoming links to it, only outgoing links. Yeah?
Number 11.
Number 11 is a source, right? And we have, this is the web page that we made with a second word that Google couldn't find, and so that's that web page, which we call experiment. All right, so I don't know if you can see, I circled it in red. Okay, what about a sink or multiple sinks? So sinks are nodes with no outgoing edges. Yeah?
Five
is one. Yeah, any other ones?
Ten.
Right? Seven, yeah. I think those are. Any other ones?
Six.
Yes, six is also sync. Yeah, and I think that's all. And they're all, they have like a purple margin edge. Okay.
Wait, you said sync was six because it only has stuff that goes into it.
That has no stuff that goes out.
Nothing that goes out. And yes. A source only has stuff that goes out.
A source has nothing that comes in. Okay. So what about a path from 1 to 9? So you have to give me, if I ask for a path, you have to give me a list of nodes where between there's a link between any adjacent nodes in the list. So how can we go from 1 to 9? Yeah. One to two following this link, two to eight following this link, and eight to nine following this link. Yeah, that's right. Okay. What about a path from 1 to 11? No? There's no path? Okay, there's no path between 1 and 11, and that is kind of one of the properties of the sources. You cannot get to a source from a different node because there's no incoming edges into it. And so we also say that 11 is unreachable from 1. That's another, you know, and if it were reachable, for example, 9 is reachable from 1, which is kind of an intuitive one. What about a cycle? Yes.
2 to 8 to 9 back to 2.
2, 8, 9, 2. Any other ones?
What was the cycle?
It's a path where the first node is like the, it's exactly the same as the last node. Yeah.
2 and 1.
But you can go to 2 and you can go back to 1. I think those are the two that I found. Any other cycles that you can see? I couldn't find any other ones. Okay. So now you have to answer this question, which is, which statement is not true of this graph? Not true. A, it has no source. B, it has no sink. C, D, E, C, D, C, E, F, D is a cycle. D, there is no A to F path. E, A, B, D, C, E, F, D, C, A is a tour. So which statement is false? store is a cycle that has includes all the notes. Okay, so D, I think B is false. I was looking at B. I think B is also false. Anybody found a sink? I stared at it a little bit and I couldn't find a sink. I think it has no sinks either. So I think B and D. So there is an A to F path, which is A, B, D, C, E, F. That's a path between A and F.
So you're accepting both.
So they're both false. So B and D are both right answers. B is not a sink. Right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So B and D are false.
No, I'm saying that B is true. It has no sink. There is no sink. Therefore, B is true.
Oh, okay, right. Right. I thought, yeah. All right, cool. So B is true, right. Okay, so the only false one is D, which is the right answer. I got confused. Okay. Any questions?
I was looking for a sink, I couldn't find it. Yeah.
Okay, so one thing is that in computer science applications use graph for anything. So this is an example of an application. This is a map, and it has states. And we can make a graph out of this by saying, okay, the nodes will be our states, and the links between them, there will be a link between two nodes if we can go directly from one state to the other, if we could travel, if they're neighbors, basically. And so here are our links. And so we're going to try to find a path between New Jersey and New Hampshire. And so we can, in the computer, we're going to represent the graph by a list of nodes. And then for each node, we're going to have a list of other nodes where that we can reach directly from that node. And so, I don't think we need this. So this is, again, the reachable. If there's a path between two nodes, then one node is reachable from the other node. And so, okay, so let's see what are all the nodes that are reachable in this graph from A. So if we start in A and travel around the graph, what are the nodes, all the nodes that we can reach? All of them? I think it's all of them. So we can reach B, we can reach C. We can reach all of them. All right, what about C? Like starting in C, what nodes are reachable? Also all of them. Okay. So it's a very friendly graph. And so here's our map, And using this map, I drew this graph. And so here, again, there's a link between two states if I can go, if they're neighbors, basically, if I can go directly from one state to the other. And now I want to see which states do I need to traverse to go from New Jersey to New Hampshire. And so here's our algorithm. Here's our method that we're going to use. We will have a to-do list, and we're going to put in a to-do list the states where we need to go. And so for each, if we still have stuff on the to-do list, we're going to take the first item on the to-do list. We will add all the neighbors to the to-do list. And then we will go, we will travel through the first state. And then we will cross off the state off the list. We will cross the state off the list because we've gone through it. And so here's what we need to do. We start in New Jersey. And we said that we have stuff on the to-do list. We have New Jersey on the to-do list. And so we're going to add the neighbors, which are Pennsylvania and New York, because New Jersey is linked directly, is linked to New Jersey, to New York and Pennsylvania.
Where is it to put Pennsylvania?
You put all of them, because you don't know, it's like you don't really know how to, which way to go.
Okay, so you're just like every possible way to go.
Yeah, because you want to reach, say you wouldn't know how to get there. And so you don't have the whole map, you're kind of exploring the map, and you're starting in New Jersey. And so we're adding, we added the neighbors, we're traveling through New Jersey, and then we're crossing New Jersey off the list. And we still have stuff to do on the to-do list. We have Pennsylvania, so we add the neighbors of Pennsylvania, which are New York and New Jersey. So we add them to the list, and so we travel through Pennsylvania. We cross it off, then we go to the next one. Next one is New York. We add the neighbors. We travel through New York, cross it off, and we get to New Jersey again. And that's a problem, right? So instead of being efficient and going towards our goal, we went back to New Jersey. So this is not a good algorithm. It's going to be very inefficient to use it. And so what can we do to improve it? Well, we could just say, oh, have we been to New Jersey yet? We have. We're not going to go there anymore. We're going to make a sign, or we're going to mark it as visited, and so we won't go there as we travel through the states. And so, again, we mark the node as reached once we got there. And so this is called breadth-first search, because what we're doing is we take each node, we write all the neighbors in our to-do list, and then we go through each neighbor and again put all the neighbors in the to-do list. So we basically explore the graph in a breadth search way. And so what's going to happen is we're going to have A on the to-do list, because we want to start in A. That's our starting point. And so we mark it as reached, and then we put the neighbor on the to-do list and cross it off the list. Next, what we're going to do is we're going to mark B. We're going to put its neighbors C and D on the to-do list and cross it off the list. And so that's what we did. We marked it. We added the neighbors. Next one is C. We marked that. We put its neighbors in the to-do list. Go to D. We add E because E is one of the neighbors. Actually, we had F first on the to-do list, so we're going to go to F first, because C came before D, and so we put F, we mark that we've been there, E, and then we're done. We basically cover the whole graph. And so another way is to go depth first search. So we go to the first neighbor, and we go to the first neighbor of that, until we can't, there's no more places to go. And when we reach that point, when we're in a node and there's no more places to go, we mark it red, like, you know, there's nothing I can do from here. It's a dead end. And so it kind of works the same way. I go to A, I mark it as visited. I go to B, then I go to C, then I'm going to go to F, then I'm going to go to E, and from E, I can only go to C, but I've already gone there. And so there's no more places to go from here. And so I'm going to mark this red, and I'm going to go back to F. There's no more place to go from F, so I'm going to mark it red. I go back to C, and there's actually D where I can still go. I'm going to go to B. I'm done with B. Mark it as red. I'm done with C. Mark it as red. There's no more place to go from B. There's no more place to go from A, and I'm done with it. So these are the two ways to traverse graphs if I want to explore the whole graph. And so going back, now we have all the stuff that we need to talk about how Google actually does it. How does it search for web pages? And we decided that it actually crawls. It starts with a web page that has lots of links from it, like yahoo.com or some other popular web page. And it basically follows the link. And when it follows the link, it adds that page to its visited web pages. And so on. So it basically crawls the web by following links. Then what it also does, it has a huge index for each word in any language, I guess. There's a link to a list of all the web pages that contain that word. And so whenever, and that is kept somewhere so that Google doesn't have to do the search every time it runs. So basically, when you type in a word, there's already a list, and then it just puts the list off the screen. And sometimes there's lots and lots and lots of pages for a word. And you don't just have one word, you have multiple words. And so there needs to be search in that huge list of web pages. And it uses a whole bunch of computers, lots of computers, to look in the list of web pages. And that's how it's able to give you results really, really fast. And so those are the three steps. Google started as a PhD thesis it was a research project, and they actually published a paper where they're describing what they're doing. And you know, after they've done really well, they were very successful. Now, if you work at Google, if you're a computer scientist and work at Google, they would have you sign something that says you're never going to talk about anything you've seen or anything you've done. So it's very secretive, so we don't really know the details of everything that they're doing now, but we know the main, you know, we know that they have lots and lots and lots of computers that are not super powerful, but as a group of computers, they can do lots of things because they kind of divide the work between them. And so those are the main three ideas that Google is based on. And so now you know. This is another thing that Google uses a lot, because they have so many lists of so many numbers, you need a way to keep everything organized. And so we're going to see how sorting is important to have things sorted. It helps you find things really fast. And so we're going to talk about a few sorting algorithms. But first, let's remember, this is a question about a list, and you have a script here. It says, can you also? So you have the script that has an I, which is set to 1, which will be the variable that will help us go through the list. It says repeat length of deck. Deck is just a list of numbers. And what it is, it's 78, 10, 65, 72, 31, 40, 27, 49, 31, and 96. And so that's your list. It's called deck. And this repeats for length of deck, that's how many times it repeats what's inside this loop. And what's inside the loop is, if item I of deck is equal to 10, say yes and stop script, and then change I by 1. And outside the repeat, it says no and stop script. And the question is, what will does the script say and why? So A, it says yes, because it answers the question, is the length 10? B, it says no, because it answers the question, is the sum of all the numbers 10? C, it answers no, because it asks the question, is the first element 10? D, it answers yes, because it asks the question, does this contain number 10? And E, it answers no, because it asks the question, are all elements of the list equal to 10?
Thank you.
can stop at 2:30. It's going through the whole list, and it says, and for each item in the list, it asks, is item I of deck, so is the number at that ith location in the list equal to 10? So basically, if that happens, the first time that happens, it says yes, it stops the script, and so it answers the question, does the list contain 10?
What does that mean? If it contains 10, would that mean the number is used?
Yeah. Can you say that again?
Well, like, isn't it really answering, like, if there's 10 items in the list?
You mean the script?
Yeah.
No, because how would you change that? Why are you saying that?
Because it, like, repeats it 10 times because there's 10 items in the list.
Right. It does repeat it 10 times because there's 10 items in the list, but it says if each item, does this item equal to 10?
Okay.
And, yeah.
I knew because it says item
right.
I, because there is a list of 10, but then it was asking specifically about the item.
Right. And when it says item, it's about the...
Did
you want to ask a question?
Why doesn't it say no verbs? Because the first one is 78, not 10.
Because that would stop it completely, right? So here's what happens. It stays in this loop. It goes over each element. If this never happens, it says no. If the first time this happens, it says yes and it stops script, right? And so if it would say no, then it wouldn't give it a chance. It wouldn't give a chance to all the other elements, right? Because what if the last element is 10, right? Then you're seeing the first element, which may be 5, and then you're saying no, and you're stopping, right? Does that make sense? So your suggestion is to say no here?
No, I was just wondering why you didn't say no initially, but now I realize because the no is not within the loop, so
yeah,
it
it's
just
not,
doesn't say anything, but
right.
It's not 10.
Exactly, and it just waits patiently to finish the list.
Yeah.
If it never found it, it says no. Yep. Okay, so we said that Google basically crawls the web, finds a web page. And what it does when it finds a web page, it takes all the words on the web page and adds, so if, for example, if the word garden is on the web page, it goes in its index, it adds the web page to the list of web pages that contain the word garden. And so here's taking three web pages and dumped all the words in this file. And so what these numbers are, this is web page 4. And this is web page 9. And so there's, on web page 9, there's a word header. There's a web header, and so on, right? And so if you just dump all the words in this file, this is what you get. So, find the word has in this list. Is the word, which web page is it on?
Nine.
Okay, which is here. Okay, what about PY? Four. Okay. So, okay, the point is, this is a mess, right? So these are three small web pages, but you have trillions and trillions of web pages on the internet. This would be a mess if you had to work with this. And so what I did next is all these, I organized all this information. This is just saying that, to find a word, you have to go through the whole set of words, basically all these words. And it's pretty, what if you skip a word? It's very error-prone. How long does it take to find a word in here?
Like
You have to go through the whole list. So in the worst case, it's the last word. So that it's big O event if you have N words in the list. It's a lot of work. And so if I sorted the words and I eliminated the, if there's the same word twice on the same page, I just eliminated that. And so find the word page. What is it?
Three and nine.
Okay. What about the word great? Nine and three also? Just nine, right? But it's so much easier to find it, right? Let's see another example. We have actually the same list. This is an unsorted list. This is the sorted list. And I have a question about, what is the max in this list? What is the maximum number? What's the biggest number on the list? Okay, nine. So did you look it up here or did you look it up here?
The bottom one.
How long did it take you to find it in this list? How many numbers did you have to look at? One number. How many numbers do you have to look here? All of them. So what would this be a big O of? If you have N numbers in the list, what's that be a big O of? Actually, that's a good question. Sorry. So you have an unsorted list, and you have N elements in the list. How many numbers do you need to look at to find the maximum number? And your options are big O of log N, big O of N, C, big O of N log N, D, big O of N squared, or E, a constant. I'm going to stop at one. Big O of N, because you have to go through each element in the list and look it up. Okay, what about if the list is sorted? How many numbers do you have to look at to get the maximum number? A, big O of log N, B, big O of N, C, big O of N log N, D, big O of N squared, or E, a constant. And I'm going to give it 30 seconds. Helps a lot, especially if you have lots and lots and lots of things. There's also let's see. What if? How many? What's the sum of these numbers? Okay, if you had to make the sum of these to figure out the sum of these numbers, would you look in this list, or would you look in this list? What'd you say? Either one, right? It's just as hard. So it helps to look in the sorted list. For some things, it doesn't. What about do two numbers add up to 86? Well, 86 is not going to work. 1,000. Which one would you use? Does it matter? It does matter. Okay, we're going to see how that matters. Another question was, is there a repeated number in the list? Which one would you use, the sorted or the unsorted? The sorted, and that's going to make a very big difference. Min, max, we kind of did. What about the median? The sorted, right? It's going to take just as long. You just have to look at the number in the middle. Okay. So how would you do the pair adds to, so the question is there a pair that adds up to 1054, okay? And if you worked with the unsorted list, you just have to go through all the lists. And so this is, the first number is blue, so I'm looking at the first number, and I have to find, okay, subtract, you know, 1054 minus 262, and get a number, and then look for it in the whole list, right? So for each number, I have to, you know, for 262, I have to look through the whole list. Then 201, I have to look through the whole list, and so on. And that will be, for each number, I have big O of n. I have n numbers, and that's going to be big O of n squared. It's going to be a lot of work. What about here? When it's sorted, what I can do is, I look at the first number, it's 124, and then I look at the last number, and I add them up. How much does that give me? That gives me 1101. And so that's too much, right? I want to find a pair for 124. And so what I can do is, I know that this is too big. What about this one, right? And there's no risk of skipping any number. And so let's add up a 124 plus 947. That gives us 1071, which is still bigger. We go to the next one. That gives us 1042. And we know for sure that there will be no pair for 124 because it would have to be somewhere in here between 918 and 947, right? And so we were done with 124, and we only looked at three numbers yet. And so we go to the next one. So this is too small. We move to 126. Let's add up 126 and 918. And this is 1044. We need 1054. And there's a 10 difference, and we don't have that here. And so we know that 126 doesn't have a pair either. If we go to 147, we add that to 918. So notice, I don't have to go all the way back. I just add it here, and I figure that this is too big, so I definitely need to go this way. I go to that, and I get 907, and that's my pair. So I got 147 plus 907 gives me exactly the number that I need. And that is going through a list just once, which is pretty good for finding a pair of numbers. So in this case, it makes a pretty big difference. And so here's our first sorting algorithm. So what we're going to do is, we will go over the unsorted list. We're given an unsorted list. We want to get a sorted list. We look for the smallest number in the list, and then we set it aside. And that will be our first number in the sorted list. I'm going to show you how this works. And so we have this list of numbers. What's the smallest? It's 2. And so we take that, we put it aside in the sorted list. We find the next smallest number, which is 4. We take that, we put it as the second number in the list. 5 is the next number. It's going to be our third number in the sorted list. Then 6. And then 8 and 9. Right? And now we have a sorted list. And this is called selection sort because I always select the smallest number in the list. And so how long will this take? So for each, the first number, when I selected the smallest number, how many numbers do I have to look at in the list to find the smallest number? If my list is n numbers. 6, right? So n numbers. What about for the next number? 5. For the next number, 4, right? So it's n plus n minus 1, n minus 2, dot, 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 1, right? And so what is that? What kind of big O is that? 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus dot, 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 plus n. N squared, right? We just talked about that. All right, very good. So this is our scratch code for the selection sort, and I'm going to show you we have a scratch program. What I basically do is for each assorted, let's see. I have a list, and for every, so this is deck because, you know, we're thinking about sorting cards. For every element in the deck of cards, I find the smallest, element, and then I insert item smallest of deck at the last element in sorted. So every time sorted is my sorted list. Every time I find the smallest, I add it at the last, so I add it in the last position of the sorted list. And then I delete the smallest from the deck. And so this, I need this step because I might have stuff in the sorted list, so I want to start with an empty sorted list, and that's why I delete everything else. I clear basically the sorted list, and then I do this. And then I say timer so that we can compare how fast I'm going to compare this to something else. And so this is just a subroutine that computes, that kind of gives me the smallest element in one list. And this takes about 2.5 minutes to sort 100 items, which is a pretty significant amount of time. And so we decided that the selection sort is a big over n squared. And what happens if the list is sorted in the beginning? Is that going to make my life easier? Is that going to take shorter? So if my list is sorted in the beginning, how long does it take to find the smallest element? One. And then I take the element and I move it to the sorted list. How long does it take to find the next smallest one? One, right? So for each element in the list, it takes me n. So that's going to make it big O of n. So that's going to be a better, but that's not very useful because the list is already sorted. And so it doesn't help me too much. So other a lot of sorting algorithms have this big O of n squared time. There's another algorithm called bubble sort, and I'm going to go over it. It's basically, if I called n people to the front of the class, and I asked you to sort yourselves according to your height, how would you do it?
Stand up and look one another, right?
So stand next to one another, yeah. And then what? So say you wanted to have the higher people on the, that's your left, and the tallest on the left and the shortest on the right. You would look at your neighbor and you would see, are we sorted? If we're not sorted, we're going to switch, right? And so on. And so that's what bubble sort does. And so this is what it does. I'm starting with the same list. It says 692584. I'm taking the first two numbers, they're actually sorted, so I'm going to leave them like they are. 9 and 2 are not sorted, so I'm going to switch them around, and they're going to be 2 and 9. Then I'm moving to 9 and 5, and they're not sorted, so I switch them to 5 and 9. 9 and 8 are not sorted, switch. 9 and 4 are not sorted, switch. And I'm getting this after a run. And notice that after a run, my biggest element is the last element in the list. But this is still not sorted, so I need to do it again. And so I do the 6 and 2, I switch them. I do 6 and 5, I switch them. 5 and 6, then 6 and 8 are cool. 8 and 4, I need to switch. And 8 and 9 are sorted. And this is my second run through the list. And this is still not sorted, I need to go over it again. 2 and 5 are good. 5 and 6 are good. 6 and 4 are not good. Switch. 6 and 8 are okay. And 8 and 9 are okay. And now I have, it's still unsorted. 2 and 5. 5 and 4 still need to be switched. And I think now everything's sorted. Okay? And so there's this big O of n squared field because I need to run, every time I run through the list, I need to go over basically n elements. And I need to do that n times in the worst case. And so here's one. This is based on the game Guess Who. And so what we're going to do here is we have 16 cards. And if we were to guess, say we played against a computer, what guess would we guess to We want the smallest amount of guesses. And we've talked a little bit about this when we had the little South Park characters. What should we ask the computer to get the smallest number of guesses? What would be a good question to ask, and why? Yeah. Yes, and why is that? Yes, so we said that a very good guess is a guess that that splits the set in about half, in exactly half, actually, if that's possible. And so, well, one question would be if it's, you know, are they cross-hatched? And that splits it in, we have 5, and the rest, which is 11, so that's not a very good split. But if we ask the squiggle, it splits it exactly in half. And that's a good question to ask. And so this takes us to, so each question that we ask splits the set in half. And so we need to pick a question so that the largest of the two sets is going to be as small as possible. And so if we ask a question that splits the set, like the crosshatched one, in 5 and 11, we have to make the 11 as small as possible. 11 is too big. And so the question that is chosen so that the larger of the two subsets is as small as possible is the one that splits it in half, because that's going to make them equal. And so we can't do better than that, right? If we have 16 cards and we have something that splits it in 8 and 8, that's the best choice that we have. Because if we go 9 or, what's 8 minus, 9 and 7, that's not good because 9 is bigger than 8. And so if we have one question, n is 1 is 1 card, then we're done. If we have 2 cards, we only need 1 question. If we have 4 cards, we need 2 questions, because we split it in half, we get 2. We split it in half once, we get 2. We split it in half the second time, we get 1, and we're done. If we have 8 questions, if we have n equals 8 cards, we need 3 questions. If we have 16, we need 4 questions, and it's, for n questions, it's log n. So if we can ask, you know, guessing a card will take log n, because every time we ask a question, that splits our set in half. And we only need to look in half of a set. And so this is our binary search. This is what the binary search is based on. And the binary search is exactly what, you know, not maybe not exactly, but what you do when you look for a person in the phone book. And that's why it takes so such a, you know, short time, because the phone book is pretty big. And so this is not binary search, it's binary sort. So I want to add this new item to this list. And I need to decide where do I add it. I need to find it fast. And so what I do is, so how many comparisons do we need to make to find where this number belongs? In the worst case. So we can do, what we can do is we can go over the list and say, you know, is it bigger than 2? Is it bigger than 2? Yeah. Go, you know, keep going. Is it bigger than 4? It is. Keep going to the right until I reach something that's bigger than the number that I want to add. And so what I do is I go over the list and I stop at 8 and I add it, I add the number there. And so the max number of comparison is n, basically, because in the worst case, I have to go over the whole list. And so what I can do is I can look in the middle, and I can compare the number with the number in the middle. And here I have 5 and 6. I'm going to choose 5. So is 7 bigger than 5? If it is, I'm going to go and look for a spot in the on the right side of 5. And notice that I completely skip 2 and 4, and I don't even have to look at them. So I saved, in this case, I saved 2 operations. And if the list is 1 million, I save 50,000 operations, which is very good. And it gets really good when the numbers are very big.
Are the numbers always sorted?
This is in an assorted list. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. And so this is what we do. We compare the new number with the number in the middle. If the number is smaller, so if 7 were smaller than 5, I would look to the left. If the number is bigger, which it is, I look on the right. And so I'm going to look in this half now. because 5 is smaller than 7. And so my middle now is 6. Is 6 bigger than 7? It's not. So I'm going to look on to the right again. And so I'm going to look in this list. And 8 is actually bigger than 7, so I'm done. I can, because I only have 2 numbers left, I know that it's exactly, the spot is exactly between 6 and 8. And so I'm basically done looking for a spot. And this is going to be very fast on very big lists. And this is actually, this algorithm is log n, because I only, every time I'm splitting the list in half, and I'm only looking in half of the, in half of the list. And so that gives me a big old, that gives me a big old log of n plus 1. N plus 1 because I might have to, if I have an even number of elements in the list, I might have to do an operation, an extra operation. I might have to look on an extra number, for an extra number. And so what the binary search sort does is basically for, you know, I'm keeping all the time, I'm keeping a list of the sorted, sorted numbers, and I'm keeping the list of the remaining numbers. And for each number in the unsorted list, I will try to find its spot in the sorted list. And so I need log n operations to find the spot for a new number in the sorted list, which I showed before. And so for each number, I need log n operations. So because I have n numbers, I need n times log n operations for doing a binary search sort. And so so this is a little tricky, but the one that I'm going to talk next, the last one, is actually truly n log n. And so this is the binary search, the code. You can look through it if you want. You can run, and I'm going to show you, you can run it and see how long each one takes. And this is about half a minute for 100 items. So the one, the previous one, the n squared one, was 2.5 minutes. So that's about 5 times shorter. And so quicksort is the most popular sorting algorithm. It's n log n, but in practice, it goes really fast. And so I think that, I'm not sure, but I think probably Google uses something like this. And so I'm going to skip this block. So what we do is, ideally, we choose the median, so we have our, I guess we don't have our, so we have an unsorted list. If we had a little person that could guess the median, let's assume that we have a little person that could guess the median. The median is 56, which we don't really know how to do very fast in an unsorted list. But we can split the set into numbers that are smaller than the median and numbers that are bigger than the median. And there's going to be almost exactly the same number. That's going to split the list in about half. And so what we do then is we sort the same way. We sort the smaller one, the list of numbers that are smaller, and the list of numbers that are bigger, and then we glue them together. So the median is here. All these numbers are sorted, all the numbers in the list that are smaller than the median, and this on the right side of the median are all the numbers that are bigger than the median and also sorted. The problem is we don't know the median. We don't have something that can guess the median in a good way. And so in practice, the way we use this this algorithm is we pick a random item, and we're going to call it the pivot. And so because usually lists are very big, randomness sometimes works very well, we will that gives us a pretty good partitioning of the set. And so this quicksort works horribly if the pivot is always either the biggest element or the smallest element. That's going to give us a log n squared. But this works really well in practice. And so I'm going to give just an example. I wrote down what this algorithm does. It picks a random item and calls it a pivot. It puts the items that are smaller than the pivot on the left side of the pivot, and the numbers that are bigger puts them on the right side. And so then it sorts the two halves the same way. So it's a recursive algorithm. So we say we choose randomly 5. This is completely a completely random choice. And then we're going to put on the left side of 5, we're going to put all the numbers that are smaller, and on the right side, we're going to put all the numbers that are bigger. So what numbers are smaller are we going to put on the left side? 2 and 4. What about the right side? 6, 8, and 9. Okay. So this is what we get. We have all the numbers that are smaller on the left, all the numbers that are bigger on the right. And now these are two lists that are unsorted. And we just apply the same principle to these lists. So we pick a random item, we call it a pivot. First of all, if these are unsorted, but once we're gonna sort them, our list is gonna look like a nice sorted list. But first we have to sort those, and we're going to use the same idea. And so we have that, and now we treat this list as an unsorted list that we need to sort. We pick a pivot, which is 2, a random number, a random element in the list. We put everything that's bigger than the pivot to the right, so now we have 2 and 4. And we're done with that. The other one, we pick 8 as a pivot, and then We put the small, 6 is small and 8, we put on the left, 9 is bigger than 8, we put on the right, and we're done with that list. And so those two are two sorted lists because they're a list of one element. They're considered sorted. And we're done. And so that is the, this is the best sorting algorithm that you're gonna get. And this is, I want to show you a video that Michael made on, he actually sings in it, and also his son Max and Molly. I think it might be a little entertaining. It talks about a comparison between selection sort, which we talked about before. It's about, you know, picking the minimum number all the time and making that the first element, then picking the minimum in the remaining list, and that is quick sort.
In an IT department on a Dell made in Texas, I met up with a sorter I didn't think I knew. I said, my name's Selection. He said, you can call me Quicksort. And since we're sharing cycles, won't you tell me what you do? I said, I put my cards in order by running through my data and pulling out the smallest card from the ones here in my fist. And after I remove it, I start the process over. And after n times through the pile, I've got a sorted list. So he looked at me with pity and said, son, that ain't too pretty. With n times through a list of n, your time is quadratic. And his voice fell to a whisper, and the disband stopped its whining. Said, if you're gonna sort a list, boy, you got to learn to sort it quick. You got to know when to swap them, know when to stop them, know when to terminate, and know when to run. Whether it's strings or numbers, if it's in place or it's stable, keep your time for doing sorting to a minimum. Pick a random card, it's the one I call the pivot. Split up the rest of them depending on their size. The big ones on the right, I put on a stack for later. And if the left pile isn't sorted, the process I reprise. Each time I deal a card out, it joins a group that's smaller, quite often half the size. So I said yes, but then, with all those random pivots, you're gonna need to be quite lucky. He said, you might call it gambling, but to me it's N log N. You got to know when to swap them,
when to swap them,
know when to stop them,
when to stop them,
know place or it's stable. Keep your time for doing sorting to a minimum. You got to know when to swap them, know when to stop them, know when to terminate, and know when to run, whether it's strings or numbers. If it's in place or it's stable, keep your time for doing sorting to a minimum.
The harder concept, so that you know people would listen to it and maybe, I don't know, understand it better. They say that music, if you want to memorize something, music is the best way. I'm not sure if memorizing this is the right way to learn it. I actually think it's not, but it's still entertaining, and you know, it's more entertaining than me explaining it. So So basically what we talked about today was, you know, we need, you know, the web search needs a fast way to sort the, a good way to sort the words on a web page, so that when it needs to find, you know, it needs to find a web page or a word, it can do that quickly. And so another concept is the concept of a heuristic. And there's a difference between an algorithm and a heuristic. Algorithms are methods that are always going to work. They are fail-safe, basically. They're guaranteed to do the job. A heuristic is something that might work better, but it's not guaranteed to work, to always work. And so some people, and you know, even in computer science, they refer to both as algorithms, but actually there's a slight difference of nuance between the two. And so, for example, you know, we saw that this problem of, you know, is there a subset of, in this list, for example, is there a subset of numbers that add up to 433? That's a hard problem, because if we were to go over it systematically, we would have to basically take all this, you know, assume that, okay, maybe there are two numbers that add up to 433, try all the pairs, then three numbers, and so on. And so there's 2 to the n subsets. And we have to check each one. And so if we just want to get close, if we can say, I don't care about the exact answer, I just want something that's close, we could use something that's called hill climbing. And what hill climbing is, it's basically our target is 433. Let's just start with a random set of numbers and figure out what the sum of that is. And then try to add a number that gets us pretty close to 433. And so, for example, adding 63 will get us a sum of 431. And that, we might be fine with that, okay? The problem is, first of all, we might want the exact answer. And so what we can do is we can start with a random set, try adding some numbers to it, figure out, you know, if it works or not, and then try a different one, and so on, which will be kind of time-consuming. The problem with hill climbing also is that it can get stuck in a local max. So for example, if we have something like this list and we add 400, we added 63, we get 431, it's going to be very, very hard to get something better. It doesn't really go back. It always tries to add and keep going by adding numbers, and so it gets stuck in these. It's like, you know, hill climbing comes from, you know, you want to get up to the highest mountain, and so you kind of see a hill and you start climbing on it, and then you get to the top and you actually notice that there's a higher one, but you know, you're already high. If you just want to go up, you're basically stuck on a hill when there's a higher mountain, and so that's the problem with hill climbing. And I think those are all the slides that I have for today. I just want to show you really quick the sorting program, so that you can play with it if you want. So this is the program. Your deck. So you can choose the number of cards in the deck by setting this N, by basically dragging this little button here. And that changes the number of cards, and I set it to 10 so that we can see how it sorts it. Clicking on the deck of cards will create a new deck of cards. And so once it creates a new deck of cards, it's going to put it here. Just ignore the sorted. The sorted is from the previous one. And that's why the sorted the algorithm needs to delete the sorted list first before it goes and sorts this list. And so the brown hat is a selection sort, I think. Yeah. So you can click on it, and it will run, and it's going to go pretty fast. But what it basically does is that it always selects the minimum. It puts it on the first, as the first element in the sorted list, then the next one, and so on. And then it says how long it took. And that's 3 seconds and 69 minutes. If you want to see a dramatic difference between the algorithms, you should have N be bigger. And so then you have the binary sort. And if you click on this, it took 0.01 seconds. And I think that's, there's no quick sort here. And because you all stayed, you can all click again and you get extra credit.